Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, January 27th, 2026. Present today are Senator Dunbar, Senator Yunt, myself, Senator Merrick. This afternoon, we will hold hearings on House Bill 33, Conflict of Interest for the Board of Fisheries and Game, and House Bill 26, Statewide Public and Community Transit Plan. First, we will start with House Bill 33, Conflict of Interest for the Boards of Fishery and Game, by Representative Stutes. This is the first hearing on this bill. Representative, if you and your staff, Matt Greening, would like to come forward, put yourself on the record, and introduce your bill. And please let the record reflect that Senator Olson was here at 1:30.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee. Appreciate it. For the record, my name is Representative Louise Stutes. I represent House District Number 5, which is Kodiak, Cordova, Seward, and several smaller coastal communities. I want to thank you, Chair Merrick, and committee members for hearing House Bill 33 today. This legislation is near and dear to my heart and has been a priority of the Fisheries Committee for many years. It's also a priority of the user groups involved in our fisheries, and it is instrumental in the process of our implementing our fisheries. So thank you again for hearing this. Unfortunately, Madam Chair, the Transportation Committee, of which I'm also a member, is another one of my priorities, and Commissioner Anderson is there today presenting. And so with that, I am going to respectfully excuse myself and turn this presentation over to my Chief of Staff, Matt Greening.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Greening.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Matt Greening and staff to Representative Louise Stutes. Before you today is House Bill 33, Conflict of Interest for the Board of Fisheries and Game. This legislation would allow members of the Board of Fisheries and Game to deliberate, meaning debate, on proposals for which they have a declared conflict of interest or personal interest or financial, according to AS 3953, the Executive Branch Ethics Act. Currently, board members are required to divulge a conflict of interest if they or their immediate family members are involved in the subject being deliberated on. The conflicted member can then no longer vote on and, unfortunately, can no longer speak to the proposal at hand. They must leave the table and sit with the public. Consistent with current law, House Bill 33 still precludes a conflicted member from voting and only allows them to impart their knowledge of a particular fishery or hunt before recusing themselves from the vote. The qualifications for appointment to the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game are quite different from professional licensing boards. Instead of being chosen as professionals in their field, members are selected based on their knowledge and ability in the field of action of the board and with a view to providing diversity of interests and points of view. However, I would pose to the committee, how can anyone benefit from knowledge or different points of view if they are not allowed to be shared? Shouldn't resource management be based on the use of all available information? Often in fishing, financial or personal interest is tied to that member's immediate family and is tied to a knowledge of that fishery. I think particularly in places in rural Alaska, a lot of family members own permits. They're involved in a variety of different fisheries, and the definition of an immediate family member is pretty broad, and it isn't tied to any sort of a living with or in, you know, financially dependent on. So a person who has an aunt, uncle, or brother who owns a certain type of fishing permit or even owns a permit themselves may be the only person who understands the nuances of what's being discussed. Likewise, a board member whose family are guides or lodge owners may be the only person who understands how that fishery or hunt is prosecuted. Another concern with the current conflict of interest policy is transparency, public trust, and the public process. Board members who are conflicted often still offer their input, but it's off the record during board breaks and at eases, and it's the sponsor's intent, and I think it was the Ethics Act intent, that any discussions of this nature be had on the record rather than either through public testimony or, when the board actually isn't in session. Both the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game are tasked with allocating Alaska's most precious resources. And so, I think it's the sponsor's intent that all this information be given to the board and to the public and to the agency when they're making these final deliberations. Finally, I will say that the selection process, as everyone on this committee is aware, for these two boards are highly contentious. They're, it's a composition that has kind of, you know, reached equilibrium with the public, the legislature, and the governor on his appointees. And when a person represents part of that balance is silenced when final deliberations happen, when actual decisions are made and amendments are taken up, I believe it erodes the integrity of the process. I will note that opposition to this bill claims that members can already testify on a proposal as a member of the public, which is true. But I would pose that that would be akin to asking a member of this committee to step down and offer public testimony on House Bill 33 and then not be at the table when there's deliberations on what to do with the proposal, bringing agencies before you. So in our view, the opportunity for public testimony is good for a board member, but it is not remotely the same as being a board member and being able to impart that knowledge on the record when amendments are taken up. And I would also say that, you know, as I pointed out, the final deliberations are really when all the decisions are made. So there is that public testimony opportunity for a board member beforehand, but when you know, changes are proposed and when there's something to act on, it's good to have that member up in front of the board. And I would say, just to give an idea of the scope of the recusal rates, the Board of Fisheries rate was 28% of recusals, proposals recused from 2021 to 2022. It was 27% in 2022 to 2023 cycle. And as a snapshot, in 2018, the board chairman, John Jensen, was conflicted out of one-third of the proposals at the Southeast Finfish meeting, and that was actually because he and his family are very involved in both commercial and sports fishing. And so in closing, Madam Chair, I would remind the committee that this bill still precludes a member from voting. It just allows them to debate and act as a member of the board up until that moment when a vote happens, and then they will still have to recuse themselves from the table. The sponsor believes that allowing members with expertise in particular fields to deliberate will help the boards make more informed decisions, will lead to stronger resource management statewide, and will align the process with intent as far as board members benefiting from knowledge and diversity of viewpoints. With that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions or walk through documents, whatever your will is.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Any questions? Senator Olson.
Are there opponents to this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, there are several opponents to this bill. You'll see in the opposition testimony. I believe one of them is the Kenai River Sports Fishing Association. There is also a letter that came in this morning from the Chitna Dip Netters Association. And you will note that there's a letter of opposition from former Board of Game Chair Ted Spraker. But I would note just briefly on that, if you look at the recusal rates from the Board of Fisheries to the Board of Game, the recusal rates are very low for the Board of Game. It's just less of an issue on the board. And in speaking with user groups, not to overwork this answer, but we've been working on this bill for a while, nobody wanted the Board of Game and the Board of Fish separated. They all wanted to – they meet jointly as a board, and everybody wanted to have equal treatment for both the Board of Game and Board of Fisheries.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Young.
Great presentation. I actually think you answered some of the questions I had, but I just want to confirm. So right now, if somebody's conflicted, they can still give public testimony. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Yunt, that's correct.
And then can they follow up?
Yes.
Can they do written? And then the follow-up to that question would be, because I think they can, is if they're not at the table, then the written testimony that they gave or the – you know, can that be referenced by other members? So if they, you know, write in for their area of expertise or whatever their opinions and thoughts are on it, can that be referenced during deliberations?
Through the chair, Senator Yunt, that's a very good question, and I don't think I've ever had that come up before, and I'd be happy to get the answer for you and get back to you as soon as possible.
Okay. Yeah.
Senator Yunt.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm looking at this letter of opposition from the Chitna Diplomatic Association. And it's interesting, the way these conflict of interest statutes are designed right now, is it only a financial interest or is it a broader interest? And the reason I ask is I think most Alaskans, you know, I'm from a commercial fishing town and a lot of people are involved in commercial fishing, but almost every Alaskan is involved in fishing in one way or another. You know, you could be a subsistence user, you could be a personal use user. Are those folks also conflicted out on those kind of questions? Or is it only that, like, if you were a dip netter, could you, just as personal use, would you be conflicted out? Or is it only if people have a financial interest?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, it's both a financial and a personal interest. And those are defined. Financial interest is defined in AS 3952-960. And that basically means a financial interest that's significant, which is $5,000 or more. But a personal interest is harder to define, and it is in there. So a personal interest means an interest held or involved by a public officer or the officer's immediate family member or parent, including membership in any organization, whether fraternal, nonprofit, for-profit, charitable, or political, from which or as a result of which a person or organization receives a benefit. And so when it comes to looking at applying these, it is a lot easier to prove a $5,000 financial threshold as it comes to owning a permit or owning a boat or an interest in a fishery than it is to prove a personal interest when somebody simply participates in a sport fishery. So we found that the recusal rates are higher on commercial fishermen, and they tend to be higher in areas where there's a strong financial impact. But it is both a personal or a financial interest of you or your immediate family member.
It's interesting. Brief follow-up, Madam
yes,
Chair.
Senator
I guess
Dunbar.
It's more of a comment than a question. Just fishing is so central to the culture of lots of people in Alaska. And, for example, if you were a member of Chitna Dipnetters Association, then not just you dipnet, but you're a member of this association, then clearly it's a big part of your life. But I would assume that the Dipnetter Association would be opposed to a rule that said any time anything happened on the Chitna River, they had to recuse themselves. You know what I mean? It is interesting. The way it's currently structured, it seems like it is kind of disproportionately impacting one group, like you said, because it's easier to prove. But I think even they themselves, the dipnetters or the subsistence users, would argue that their connection to this fishery is every bit as important as the folks who have a commercial interest. That's all, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Anything further? Thank you, Mr. Greening. We will invite your invited testifier up this afternoon. We have Tracy Welch, the Executive Director of the United Fishermen of Alaska. Ms. Welch, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and affiliation and begin your invited testimony. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Merrick, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today before you. For the record, my name is Tracy Welch, and I am the Executive Director for United Fishermen of Alaska. For those of you who may not be aware or may be unfamiliar, UFA is the statewide commercial fishing trade association, and we currently represent 34 commercial fishing organizations who participate in state fisheries and federal fisheries off Alaska's coast. I'd like to thank the bill sponsor and staff for a great presentation and their strong support over the years for House Bill 33 and its various iterations. UFA strongly supports House Bill 33. We've already submitted written testimony to the committee in support of the bill, so I'll keep my comments relatively brief today in the interest of time, but I'll just say that UFA has long advocated for allowing Board of Fisheries members to participate in the debate, but to abstain from voting when they're considered to have a conflict of interest. As we know, Alaska commercial fisheries are diverse in area, species, and types of fisheries, and as such, interests or issues facing board members are often unique to specific areas and species, which oftentimes is far outside of the knowledge base of many of the members of the board who serve. This bill would allow board members who have subject matter expertise the ability to stay at the table during those discussions and be able to participate in what a specific proposal means, speak to the allocative aspects of the proposal if necessary, but most importantly, to clarify when it becomes apparent that other board members may be confused or not understanding the effects of the intent of the proposal before them. To be clear, the conflicted member would not be allowed to make any amendments, substitute motions, vote on amendments, vote on the proposal, or vote on whether proposal should be brought back for reconsideration. In conclusion, we believe that this bill would improve the deliberative process at the Board of Fish and Board of Game and would lead to more informed and balanced fisheries management decisions and discussions at the Board of Fisheries. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Welch? Seeing none, thank you for being here today. And with that, we will move to public testimony on House Bill 33. I will open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify to House Bill 33? Seeing none, we will move online. Online, we have Shannon Martin, the Executive Director of the Kenai River Sports Fishing Association in Soldotna. Welcome, Ms. Martin. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shannon Martin, and I'm the Executive Director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, and I'm calling in today to oppose House Bill 33. Kenai River Sport Fishing Association is a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to ensuring the sustainability of the Kenai and Alaska fisheries. Since 1984, the association has been a leading advocate for fisheries conservation in Alaska. CRISA has long advocated against modifying the ethical standards surrounding conflicts of interest for board members serving on the Board of Fish. The current conflict of interest procedures already allow for a conflicted board member to participate in the public process on matters where they have a direct financial interest. This is stated in the HB 33 research ADF&G policy and recusal. It should be contained within your documents. Recused board member participation. Board members who are recused from taking official action on a proposal may participate as a general member of the public, including providing public testimony and discussing the proposal as a member of the public in the committee of the whole process. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Board of Fish process, committee of the whole is an opportunity for the public to speak to specific proposals, and the board members can ask them questions. This is either in opposition or support. To further clarify, board members can share their knowledge, expertise, and opinions on proposals in which they are conflicted, but only as members of the general public. So during a Board of Fish meeting, public testimony allows 3 minutes per individual to speak, after which the board can ask the questions they have of the testifier. And then in the next step is the committee of the whole process, where the board interacts and asks direct questions to the state agencies, proponents, or opponents of the proposal. Members of the public, including conflicted members, are allowed another 10 minutes to speak about the specific proposal under consideration. Following the committee of the whole work, the board enters into their former deliberations. This is what we're speaking to right now. Think of this step as the closing arguments on the matter and the final opportunity for board members to sway one way or another. During this step, the conflicted members, as you know, recuse themselves and join the public in observing the deliberations without directly influencing them. This segregation is important because in the case of Board of Fish, deliberations are a formal phase of the meeting. This time is reserved solely for the board, and they ask any questions they may have of the department. And this is also the time when the board ensures that their decision-making process has been incorporated directives under statute and where they establish board intent. It sets the record, and I'll say it another way, the deliberations phase establishes how a proposal may be implemented and interpreted by the Department of Fish and Game or the Department of Law. So allowing a conflicted individual to have influence over how allocations or regulations are interpreted and implemented, even if the influence isn't the final vote, is inappropriate. In conclusion, CRISA believes loosening the ethical standards to allow board members influence on proposals that they have a financial interest in will only undermine the integrity of the board, and we believe that this bill is not in the public's best interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next, also in Soldotna, is Ted Spraker. Welcome to the committee. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. Again, for the record, my name is Ted Spraker. I live in Soldotna. And just a brief background, I worked for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for a little over 28 years as a wildlife biologist. Soon after my retirement, I was appointed to the Board of Game And I spent the next 18 years, six terms on the Board of Game. So the conflict of interest was always a really serious issue with the Board of Game. And what we generally dealt with were guides that had a financial, you know, benefit from adopting a proposal or refusing a proposal. And whenever cases like this came up, first off, you know, at the beginning of the meeting, we always have a disclosure statement, and people that had a conflict of interest would disclose those early on, and then later during the deliberations, they would recuse themselves and not be able to participate. As far as lack of information or knowledge provided to the board, we always felt on the Board of Game that information was certainly available during public testimony, and even people with conflicts of interest could talk to people in public testimony or during the breaks and so forth, and they could bring all these points out, and they had a good opportunity for people to, you know, transfer this information to board members. So as far as, you know, not allowing this bill to go forward, I am representing myself today, but I am not in support of this bill. I think the system in the past has worked well. I think it's a very open public process, probably one of the best ones in the country, and I would not like to see anything change. I worry about transparency and integrity of the board if a person that has a financial benefit is allowed to sway other board members. Even if they don't get a chance to vote, they would still have an opportunity to talk to other board members into their position. So, Madam Chair, in conclusion, I do not support this. I think the way the system works now has been working well, and I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Spraker. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier from Fairbanks is Charles Derrick, president of the Chitna Dip Netters Association. Welcome to the committee. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Charles Derrick. I am the president of Chitna Dip Netters Association here based in Fairbanks. We are a 501c4 nonprofit organization. Madam Chair and committee members, I would like to just like to reiterate CDA's opposition to HB House Bill 33 and ask you to refer to CDA's email to the committee on that subject. HB 33 attempts to upend the established Board of Fish and Board of Game checks and balances dealing with member conflict of interest pertaining to a publicly submitted proposal. If a board member has vested personal or financial interest in the resource that the proposal addresses, he or she, by board rules, needs to recuse themselves from final board deliberations on that proposal. To do otherwise would create unfair advantage over other user groups. I just want to also remind you that the Board of Fish and the Board of Game are the entities that set the allocation harvest limits for all user groups. So when a member has personal or financial interest, it's just will be an unfair practice if he's allowed in deliberation and vote because of that ability to set allocation issues, the harvest allocations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Derrick. Any questions? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Derrick, for your testimony. I just wanted to—I don't know if you were listening earlier, but I asked a question of the sponsor, and I referenced your organization, and so I wanted to give you an opportunity to answer the question too. But you know, we're talking about conflict of interest, and it's both a financial and a personal interest. Do you feel that dip netting on a particular river or even sport fishing on a river creates enough of a conflict that, that a board member should be conflicted out of deliberation? So for example, if someone dip netted, you know, in the summer, they went and they dip netted for personal use on the Chitna, would they be, you know, for the Chitna and the Copper, or however you want to define it, maybe all of Prince William Sound, would they be conflicted out of that, in your opinion?
Dip netters are harvesting Alaska resources to feed their families. They are not feeding their pocketbooks off the resource. When it comes to financial interest in harvesting a resource, that is a conflict of interest to me. When they have a final deliberation and vote in the Board of Fish or the Board of Game. Just remember, they set the allocation, the harvest allocations.
Senator Dunbar.
No, I won't ask. Thank you for your answer, Mr.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry, Mr. Derrick. I apologize. Thank you for your answer, Mr. Derrick.
Senator Young.
Through the chair to whoever thinks they can answer it, possibly the sponsor of the legislation, but how long have we been operating the way that we are right now with these current conflict of interest rules? Is this 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, the current system that we're under?
Thank you. Before we get to the sponsor, I'm going ahead and close public testimony on House Bill 33. Mr. Greening.
Through the chair, Senator Yunt, I do have that information in here. And I believe it was in the late 80s that this change was made, but I could be wrong. I will get back to you with that information. It has been a while, but I do have it in my binder. I just have to thumb through and check it real quick.
That's okay. There's no rush if you want to get that to me later or whatever, but it's probably a close estimate, and that'll work for now. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, do you see this as just a disagreement between commercial and sport fish?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, I'm not – it's close to that. I think that to some extent – and I'm sorry, Chair Merrick. To some extent, I think that commercial fishermen have disproportionately – commercial users have disproportionately been disenfranchised by this because there are more familial relations with commercial fisheries that have a financial interest. And I will say that to the extent that we've had opposition to this, we have never had one piece of opposition from a commercial organization, and the few organizations we do have are either personal use or sports fishing. So I think there is to some extent a back and forth of from the commercial perspective, from the user group perspective, we're trying to level the playing field for all folks because the current conflict of interest really disproportionately impacts commercial. So I think that's definitely part of the answer.
Thank you. Anything further before we set this bill aside? I see no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Greening, yep, for being here today. We will set House Bill 33 aside for further consideration, and we will take a brief at ease. I call the committee back to order at 1:59 p.m. Next, we will have House Bill 26 by Representative Mina, Statewide Public and Community Transit Plans. If you and your staff, Claire Warnke, would like to come forward, place yourselves on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Merrick, and members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, Genevieve Mina. I represent House District 19 in the Alaska Legislature, the Anchorage neighborhoods of Airport Heights, Mountain View, and Russian Jack. Thank you again for the second hearing of House Bill 26 in this committee. This bill was brought forth to me in the spring of 2024, about 2 years ago, from the Alaska Mobility Coalition, as well as the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, in support of multimodal needs for people with disabilities in our state, but also to help promote multimodality within our transportation network. House Bill 26, as a recap, seeks to modernize the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities duties to reflect the needs of the state by broadening the study of transportation options across Alaska and improving the department's public engagement process. The goals of this bill are for the department's powers to be more intentionally multimodal, as well as strengthen its coordination with its stakeholders. The bill does three different things. First, it helps augment the department's duties and scope to explicitly include public transit. Second, it expands the responsibilities to study alternative transportation options by including rural and remote areas. They currently do have a responsibility to study alternative transportation modes, but that is only specific to urban Alaska. And third, the bill seeks to codify the department's public engagement process in statewide transportation planning, which would include engagement with metropolitan planning organizations, public and community programs. And additionally, we specify that public transit does include the Marine Highway System as well as the Alaska Railroad, and those were amendments included on the House side. This bill is needed from the advocacy that we've heard from the Mobility Coalition, from the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, and many different public transportation advocates, where they have been experiencing gaps in coordination between their communities, their organizations, and with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. In particular, there's been experiences with missing out on federal funding that would benefit certain communities, and ensuring that certain areas which hasn't been benefiting from the opportunity to apply for federal funding, that they have that communication with the department on those programs. That is my presentation. Happy to do a sectional again if required.
I do not believe that is necessary. I don't see any questions, so we will go ahead and – oh, Senator Dunbar.
Sorry, Madam Chair. So I don't think there is a fiscal note, correct? There's no fiscal note. So, but there is a requirement for a plan in Section 17. So is it the position of the department that – they can accomplish this with their existing resources? And is this something that they're already planning to do? Or can you describe why there's no fiscal note?
Thank you. Through the chair to Vice Chair Dunbar, in our many conversations with the department, they've stated that they are already doing some of the goals of the bill in terms of studying alternative modes of transit. They have hosted convenings in the past, and there's been positive progress with this department to help amplify the voices and advocates who want more multimodality with DOT's transportation planning. However, that's all contingent on our leadership with the administration and also the leadership at DOT. So what we want to do is help codify what the department is currently doing. I also believe that there are some representatives from the department that could speak more to what they're doing right now.
And I apologize, Madam Chair. I said no fiscal note. There is a zero fiscal note. There is a fiscal note. It's a zero fiscal note. Thank you.
And we do have a couple of folks from the department if you would like to hear from them.
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Mina. We will go ahead and move on to your invited testifiers. First, we have Patrick Reinhart, Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Reinhart. Please place yourself on the record and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Patrick Reinhart. I'm from Anchor Point, Alaska, and I am the Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Ed, and I'm one of the founding members of the Alaska Mobility Coalition, which was kind of born out of the Governor's Council and the Statewide Independent Living Council back in 2003. So anyway, I want to thank Representative Mina for sponsoring the legislation, and thank you, Chairperson Merrick, for hearing the bill today. We provided a letter of support for the legislation, as it's in your packet, I believe, and I won't repeat all the points in it. I do want to just say, you know, why this legislation? Why put public and community transportation in the enabling statute of the Department of Transportation and public facilities? And why does the Governor's Council care? Well, first, I've been a disability advocate for 40 years, and I can tell you decade after decade, year after year, transportation continues to be problems for people with disabilities and seniors and for other populations that are heavily dependent on public transportation. Our state has a patchwork of public and community transportation programs. Some communities, like you know, have a robust public transportation system, and other communities have nothing. There's no real system for planning of growth or connectivity between any of our systems. And we need that, and we need the leadership from DOT to lead that effort. We're super excited to hear about new systems coming online. For instance, down here on the Kenai Peninsula, the Kenaiki tribe recently started Catley Transportation, which includes bus service around Central Peninsula area. They use tribal transportation funds to do that, federal funds. Also, the Nanosic Village Corporation increased their bump small bus travel from 3 days a week to 5 days a week, going to Homer and up to Soldotna and Kenai from the Nanosic. These are great additions to public and community transportation and faithful to those organizations that are trying to fill the voids that exist. But there are voids all over the state, and when it comes to community transportation, we need to fill them. And we believe there are missed opportunities, both in terms of state dollars, being able to leverage federal funding to fill those voids. So this is an effort, I think, to just ask DOT to pay more attention to this and really develop a solid plan working with all the different advocates across the state, identify those gaps, identify those needs, and help plan a system that serves everybody in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reinhart. I have a brief question for you. The letter you submitted is on official State of Alaska letterhead for the governor. Can I assume that that means the governor supports this bill as well?
Well, the governor's council is a little different than a lot of different councils in that we are a federally supported advocacy board, so we can take positions regardless of the various support that we get. Typically, when we do letters of support, we put them on our official letterhead. So it's from the governor's council, and you cannot assume that the governor's office supports it.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Reinhart? Seeing none, thank you for coming to the committee today. We sure appreciate it. Our second testifier is Millie Ryan, board chair of the Alaska Mobility Coalition. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and affiliation and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you, Chair Merrick, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. My name is Millie Ryan. I live here in Juneau. Among other things, I'm president of the Alaska Mobility Coalition, one of the original founders with Patrick. So the Alaska Mobility Coalition is a nonprofit organization. It's comprised of seniors, people with disabilities, transportation advocates, like myself, although I am a senior as well, and transportation providers. Our mission is to empower Alaskans to develop transportation systems that improve their quality of life so that they're able to get to work, to doctor's appointments, to go shopping, get to church, volunteer, and do all the things in the community that I think those of us who are still able to drive take for granted. We wholeheartedly support House Bill 26. It's something we've advocated for several years. Including transit and public and community transportation in statute will help promote cost-effective, sustainable, and coordinated rides that meet local, regional, and state needs. were particularly supportive of developing a comprehensive long-range intermodal transportation plan that includes input from a wide variety of entities and individuals. We believe it'll make a significant impact on helping all Alaskans get to the places they need to go. So on a personal note, I'm a list maker. I know what happens when something gets on my C list or the to-do when time allows. It seldom happens. So we are not asking to be on A1 on the state's responsibilities, but we would like to be on that A list, which this statute change would provide. In statute, that would mean that it would be an important responsibility for the department. So we look forward to working with the department on developing that coordinated plan again so that all Alaskans can get to where they need to go. So thanks for your time. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. I see no questions. We appreciate you coming to the committee and testifying today.
Thank you.
Okay. And so with that, we'll move on to public testimony. I'm opening public testimony on House Bill 26. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing no one, we will move on. First up, we have Michelle Giralt, Executive Director of Hope Community Resources in Anchorage. Welcome to the committee. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Giralt, and I'm the Executive Director of Hope Community Resources, which is a nonprofit based in Anchorage serving Alaskans with disabilities across the state. I'm also the board chair for the Key Coalition of Alaska, and I'm here to give full support to HB 26, gratitude to Representative Mina for bringing it forward. The Key Coalition has partnered with the Alaska Mobility Coalition in recognizing that, you know, the lack of affordable and accessible transportation is in the top five barriers for people with disabilities to be able to access their community across Alaska. And this bill, as you have heard, just puts a coordinated plan on the books, and it just enables a lens to further the accessibility for people with disabilities to access the community. I think this time of year, we're all very aware of how challenging it would be if you're not driving to figure out how to get to the bus stop. Is the bus stop clear? Is there actually a bus? Maybe in Anchorage there is, maybe in Juneau there is, but in other places there's not easy transportation. And we just are in full support of this bill to shine a light on the need for Alaskans with disabilities, seniors, those that may have difficulty with transportation, to have a focus and plan that will enhance accessibility for the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Giroux. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you so much. Next from Fairbanks is David Leslie. Welcome to the committee. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is David Leslie, and I'm in Fairbanks. I'm calling in support of HB 26. I want to thank Mina for, Representative Mina for bringing this forward and for advocating it for online. And, you know, I care for my elderly Inupiaq mother. She has been disabled physically my entire life. I worry about how she will get to her appointments in the stores and do her activities of daily living if I wasn't there to give her rides. I think also making sure if she wants to go visit family in the villages, that other places across the state have certain standards, and we're making sure they're accessible to everyone. I want to highlight the importance of how things for people with disabilities benefits everyone. And it will also benefit tourism, and the more places tourists can go, even if they're not disabled, the more money will be in our economy, more it will help local businesses. And just, you know, someday I dream of seeing that affordable commuter train between Fairbanks and Anchorage, and having places where we can park and ride or easily get to those train stations, and just make sure Alaska remains accessible to everyone. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Leslie. I want to commend you on the work you do with your mother. That's quite kind. I see no one else online. Is there anyone else online for testimony? Seeing none, I will close public testimony on House Bill 26. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative, do you have any closing comments? Okay, thank you. We will set House Bill 26 aside for further consideration, and this concludes our agenda this afternoon. Our next meeting is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2026 at 1:30 p.m. With that, we are adjourned.